This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Staub Audio Engineering. If you have listened to any of the episodes, you have undoubtedly heard me talk about Mike and the phenomenal audio engineering work that he does. His mixes and masters are truly some of the best that I've ever heard. I love working with Mike on all of our Dreamfield tunes, on all of our Summit One tunes. He is an absolute wizard. Make sure to hit him up, inquire about mixing and mastering prices, and take your tracks to the next level. Oh, yeah. And Mike is also one of the nicest, kindest human beings you'll ever meet. Definitely hit him up and work with him.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all of the producers, artists, and creators that are tuning into the show. My name is Cody Christensen, and you are listening to the Chilled Samples Podcast. What is going on, man? Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Cody. How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. I'm doing great. I have to thank you for your flexibility. We were scheduling this podcast and we were planning for Friday your time, but of course I forgot that you're living in the future. It's currently Thursday in Colorado, so we had to make some adjustments. I finished up a run and I was all sweaty and you were like, "Hey, we ready to go pretty soon?" And I was like, "No, I'm not."
Let's push it back. That's fine. Yeah, I'm used to the time zone mishap. That's all good. Australia's definitely out of the way for everyone else in the world. So. Yeah.
Well, so speaking of Australia, are you in Melbourne?
Yeah. Yeah. You know. Yeah.
That's great, dude. So I actually, it would have been back in 2013 and 2014. Melbourne played a pretty significant role in my entry into electronic music production.
Oh, wow.
So in 2014 and 2015, the first EPs I made were actually Melbourne Bounce.
Oh, yeah. Melbourne Bounce, of course. We all remember Melbourne Bounce.
Oh, man. Yeah, like Will Sparks, Joel Fletcher.
Yeah.
Orchestrated. I mean, Timmy Trumpet. Is Timmy Trumpet from Melbourne, too?
Yeah, I think Timmy Trumpet was from, I think it was Hero Sydney or something, I don't know. But yeah, Timmy Trumpet and Will Sparks were the big ones, remember them, of course.
Yeah, man, yeah, so your city undoubtedly influenced my production. There's something about that four on the floor kick pattern with the eighth note bass in between, man. I don't know why it's so catchy, but man, it's some really fun music.
Yeah, man, Melbourne Bounce. That was the soundtrack to my high school life. Melbourne Bounce, that's all we listened to, man.
Well, I bet. Well, and I think, and I have to imagine with it being a worldwide phenomenon, it was pretty cool to be repping like your city, and it probably felt like your genre if you guys were going out and partying and Melbourne Bounce was on.
I mean, I don't know. I wasn't really that much into it, so I didn't know how big it was until afterwards. And I heard people from overseas talking about Melbourne Bounce, and I'm like Melbourne Bounce. I'm like, yeah, I'm like, sick, awesome. My city's on the map for once. It's really cool because usually things over here they're just big from overseas. But yeah,
I don't know if I'd be in electronic music production without Melbourne Bounce, man. So definitely, it's definitely important.
That's
for
cool,
me.
Bro. It's very cool.
Yeah, well, and your latest album with Lo-Fi Girl is unbelievably phenomenal.
Thank you, bro. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it could be more unique in regards to percussion selections, the string instruments, and then of course the woodwinds as well. Like some of those woodwinds, I'm a saxophonist, and so listening to some of those woodwind instruments that you're playing, I'm like, wow, what a interesting tone. They're so pretty, and it definitely has me intrigued. So kudos, man. Beautiful album.
I appreciate it. Thank you very, very much. Yeah, I had a blast making it. It took me a while. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. I was very, very happy with the end result. I really took my time. I didn't want to rush it. And yeah, I was very happy with the result, so thank you.
Yeah, well, you can tell that time and intentionality and artistry really went into it. And I definitely, later on in the episode, I definitely want to dive more into the inspiration behind it and the creation process.
Yeah,
but
sure.
before we get there, I just want to learn more about your story. Like, when did you first start getting into music, and how has that journey progressed? So I guess let's rewind and start from the beginning, man.
Wow. Yes. I mean, my first experience with music would have been when I was younger. I mean, my dad and my uncle were probably my biggest inspirations for music when I was young. I'm talking like ages of like 6 to 10. Used to play a lot of kind of chill out music, a lot of ambient music, and a lot of that music I still listen to through to today. It's really formed and shaped how I approach music and my inspiration for all my music. So you're talking about stuff like really, I don't even know if people know them, like Carbon Based Lifeform. They're like an ambient joy from Sweden or something, or like mm-hmm. Buddha Bar Collection. They're like the compilation CDs that they used to do in the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. They were kind of like the lo-fi girl of the 2000s. So stuff like that they used to listen to. But it wasn't until maybe I was 10 years old, maybe around 2009, 2010, that I really started paying attention to music. My dad showed me Black Sabbath and I was like, this is sick. This awesome. Is so cool. Got into playing guitar, got into learning guitar, did all that. And then didn't really do much music for a few years till I was about 13, and then got back into kind of the 70s, 60s rock. Was huge into like Zeppelin, Floyd, like all the mm-hmm. classic bands. And that was a lot of fun. I played with a few people around locally. The thing is, back then, I mean, I look at kids now and I'm so jealous that they have stuff like TikTok and Instagram to connect them over mutual interests, because like I'll be on these platforms and I'll see like 15-year-olds and 16-year-olds who love Pink Floyd and love Led Zeppelin, who just get to connect with each other. Mm-hmm. Back then, I had like one or two people I knew that yep. maybe liked a few songs. It wasn't even like I could connect with these people. And so it was really hard to find like-minded people to make music with, and that was really, really tough. Which was, you know, good in the sense that I learned how to work by myself and make my own music, but also didn't really have the social aspect, which I obviously really loved. So I did that for a bit, and then it was really interesting. I was looking for a band to play in because I wanted that social aspect, and all of the bands around here in Melbourne at the time, so this is kind of 2012, 2013, I think, there were kind of a few different types of bands. You had your kind of Metallica cover bands, which weren't really cover bands. They were just trying to do what Metallica was doing. You had your pop punk. You had your pop punk bands. So you had your Blink 182, Sum 41 cover bands, which at the time I wasn't into, but later on loved. And I've already bought yep. tickets to see Blink when they come here. And
oh, great, man!
In February 2024 is when they've blessed us. February 2024. We're on the last leg of the Blink tour.
They're doing a whole world tour.
Right? It's ridiculous, bro. It's like 14 or 16 months. It's a joke. It's ridiculous. So got all there to see them.
That's wild, dude.
But you had your Blink bands, and then you had like your deathcore, like new metal, like bands. And I'd never listened to that stuff. I met some people who were in that, who were starting a band like that, and I wasn't really into the music, so I was like, whatever. And then a few months later, I started getting into that music, and so ended up playing in a deathcore band, or a few deathcore bands here in Melbourne as a guitarist, which was really, really fun. I still love that music. I've still got a few friends in that scene. But yeah, it was a lot of fun playing in those kinds of bands. But after I did that, so I did that from about 2014 to about 2016. I played in deathcore bands. I played in metal bands. Did the whole experience, and then started getting more into post rock things like Explosions in the Skies, that kind of thing, and really loved that music. And I set up. I remember I had my little Focusrite in my room, and I started kind of jamming out with post rock and like. Within this one weekend, I made my first ever EP. It was like this three-track post-rock EP. And the reason I released it was because it was the first piece of music I'd ever recorded by myself that was listenable, that was actually enjoyable, mm-hmm. that I thought was really, really good. And I made that April 2016. I still have the cover art sitting there in my room. And it didn't do like extremely well, but this is back before like Spotify was really a thing mm-hmm. as well. And so, you know, I had like a three-track EP up on Bandcamp, got a few hundred downloads, so I was really happy about that. But the more I got into music and the more I got into making my own music, the more I realized that guitar and drums and bass was very, very limiting into the sounds that I wanted to create. especially when a lot of what I was listening to was ambient music. I was listening to a lot of electronic music, chill step, that kind of thing. I was like, how do you even create these sounds? And what do you do? And so I started getting into actual production around 2017, end of 2016, end of 2017. And it was just like horrific. It was shitty music, man. It was terrible.
Dude, well, it's similarly.
Like, it was bad, man.
Yeah, but at the same time, going into production from that instrumentalist perspective, at least for me, like once I actually started to understand what I was doing, I just fell in love so quickly. Like being able to produce full pieces by yourself, it was magical. And I want to back up a little bit. So when your dad and your uncle were playing ambient music, like were they just they were just jamming it like around the house, or
just be playing through speakers? I mean, the two most distinct memories I have was dad would just play it through the hi-fi system at home. Or I spent a lot of time with my uncle in my younger years. And whenever we used to go for a drive, he used to just have that music playing in the car.
Wow. Yeah,
and that's when I listened to a lot of the music. Just to sit there and listen to the music going on drives around Melbourne was nice. It was really, really nice.
That's really cool. Well, I guess how did they discover that music? Like what led them to having an affinity towards that ambient style of music?
I have no idea. It's a question I've never even asked. It's a really, really good question. It's just all I've ever known. It's just always been there. That's all, and to this day, man, like if I walk into the house when dad's home, he's got ambient music playing through his, speaker like 15 years later. That's just how it's always been.
That's incredible. Well, and I'm sure when he listens to your lo-fi work, I'm sure he's just blown away.
Yeah, I mean, I've told both of them, like, this inspiration is, you can hear the inspiration, like, yeah, of course, like, this is directly tied over. Yeah. I mean, it was big.
That's special, man. Well, and I love, absolutely love your deathcore metal experience as well. And so for me, at the same time I was in love with Melbourne Bounce, I really started to fall in love with dubstep, and I still perform produce sick dubstep. And so in a single day, I can go from mixing lo-fi tracks to writing dubstep. And there's something about being able to, at least for me, bouncing back and forth between those genres just allows me to continuously create. I never feel burnt out because they're just so different. And I guess for me in my personal life as well, like when I'm running, like I'm not typically listening to lo-fi. I'm typically listening to dubstep, right? And then as soon as I get back to the house and I start stretching and rolling, like boom, okay, then I'll throw on lo-fi. And I love that I have the opportunity to create music that expresses multiple sides of myself. And I also get to use that, use those varying genres as tools within my life. So, I'm stoked that, we're on a lo-fi chill hop centric podcast. And then we're talking about dubstep and deathcore and metal bands. I love it.
But I mean, that's the thing, man. I was talking about this to one of my friends the other day. I think music is incredible because it can be, I mean, I used to write film music as well. I mean, the part of the story that I got up to, it kind of splits off into production and film music, but it's a really good example with film music. I mean, film music is there not to be the best music you've ever heard, but it's there to enhance whatever's going on screen. If a character's really upset, the music is there to be sad. If the character's happy, the music's going to be happy. It doesn't need to be the best music ever. It just needs to kind of enhance the screen, but not take away the attention. And I feel like music kind of can play a similar role in anyone's life. I mean, if you're sad, you can listen to sad music or happy music if you want to counter that. If you're angry, you can go listen to your dubstep or your deathcore. Mm-hmm. If you want to chill, you listen to chill music. If you want, there's so many different styles of music that you can listen to depending on what context you want to be in, I love lo-fi. I love my ambient music. But if I'm driving with my friends, I'm not putting on lo-fi and ambient music. I'm putting on like whatever. I'm putting on tech or whatever. Yep. I'm putting on stuff that's a bit more enjoyable socially because that's just what I feel like listening to. So, it's definitely good having a wide spread of music to listen to whenever you want to help whatever mood you're in.
Yeah. Well, and I think that might be something that we may take for granted in regards to having Spotify and other platforms to be able to we don't have to have a CD collection or a record collection of 500 different pieces to be able to change our mood when we want to. You know, we have our earbuds in, we have our phone, boom, instantly get to enhance or adjust our mood just based on these apps. Like it is really incredible. And I love talking to people in individuals in their 60s and 70s that just discover Spotify and start to use it, because they're always baffled. You know, they're just like, this is ridiculously insane. I can't believe I have all of these songs right here at my fingertips. It's so special, man.
Yeah, man, this is pretty much my dad. He was talking to me about the algorithm, and he's like, man, I just put on a song, I go to the radio, and just every single song on there is just exactly what I want. I'm like, yeah, it's incredible. It is really, really, really amazing. It's an incredible way to discover new music. It's really, really cool.
It is. So shout out to Spotify for doing that. But I interrupted your story a little bit, man. So 2016, 2017, you start getting into production. Where does it take you?
This is where the story kind of splits in two. There's two sides to this. There's the side of I'm kind of learning production. I'm learning how to produce. I'm kind of getting a bit into like singing. Not really. I still can't sing to this day, so I wouldn't even call them before getting into singing. But I'm starting to experiment with like every single genre of music you can think of. I'm doing a little bit of electronic music. I'm doing a little bit of ambient music. But the kind of constant around that was every time people heard my music, they said, wow, this sounds like it belongs in a movie. You should try write music for a film. And I'm like, you know what? I'll put out some of my music and I'll see if any filmmakers are interested. And I had this filmmaker from Colac, which is like an hour and a half away from here, who's like, hey, we're working on a short film and we're also working on a feature film. We'd love to get you to do music for it. But we want to get you to do the short film first, see if it's good. And, you know, if we're happy with this, we'll get you to do the feature. I'm like, okay, cool. So I'm like, at the time, I think this was like my final year of school. So I will preface this by saying I don't know how I pulled this off, but I had no knowledge of like music theory. I literally knew nothing. Like I was just like a kid with a guitar and like knew a few scales on the piano, and that's literally it. Nothing compared to what I know now. And so I did the short film. It was just kind of guitar based and they were really, really happy with it. They got me to do the feature film. And I spent, I think, 2 or 3 months doing the music for this feature film. Again, I have no idea. I have no idea how, because I swear, man, I knew like 6 chords on the guitar and like a few Logic stock presets. And obviously the music isn't going to be, it's not going to be great compared to what I can do now. But I managed to do a feature film, which is very cool. And then for a while, that's what I wanted to do. For a while, my whole thing was I want to write music for films. I want to be a film composer. And that kind of stuck through from the start of 2017 all the way to the, I want to say mid 2020. So it was a pretty long, you know, it was like three years where I was really trying to break into this industry. And I went to uni in 2018. So I went to what you guys would call college in 2018. I was studying statistics and commerce. So I finished school, went to that. In the background, still making music and stuff, but was kind of focusing on that a little bit. And at the end of that year, I was like, no, I need to do music. I need to give this a proper shot. I need to see if it is even possible for this to be a career. I have no idea, because it was still kind of in between a hobby and kind of something serious. I hadn't really ever sat down and given it like a full run. And so at the end of 2018, I turned around to like my partner at the time and my family, and I'm like, I'm dropping out of uni. I can't just take a break. I need to like make a full commitment. I can't, if I was going to take a break, it would still feel like it's in the background. I need to cut it. And I remember everyone sat me down. They're like, look, just take a break. You don't cut it. Don't, you're going a bit crazy. You're like, just chill. So I'm like, okay. So I took a break. I think I did end up dropping out the year after, but I took a break and I just went, okay, I'm going to just focus on making music. I need to just sit down and I need to really figure this out. And so I started with the Instagram and I started with the marketing and this and this and this. Pretty much that went on 2019 and the start of 2020. Where am I in this journey? 2018. 2019 did music. Yeah, 2019 till about mid-2020, I was really pushing hard for this film music thing and it just wasn't going anywhere. I did a few short films. I did some work with some music libraries. It just wasn't going anywhere, man. I was going in circles. Mm. Like, I think across that year and a half, I made a total of like $4,000. Like, I was living at home, so I didn't have any expenses, but I wasn't making money. It wasn't going anywhere. I didn't see much growth, you know, had a few little successes. And then mid-2020, I put out a thing on Instagram called, like, I put a thing like being like, hey, show me some new music. Like, let's see what you guys are listening to. And someone linked me a Kokoro track from one of his EPs. I think it was his first EP. And I listened to it. Yeah, his Tranquil EP. And I was like, this shit is bonkers. I've never heard anything like this. So I messaged him like, what is this style of music called? He's like, this is called lo-fi. And I was like, shit. I've actually got a friend who makes lo-fi, and my friend was J-Hove. Like, I was friends with J-Hove before he got onto Lo-Fi Girl and before he did that. And so I started making lo-fi because I was like, this feels like the next natural progression for me. This feels like I'm making ambient music, I'm making film music, I'm doing all that. I feel like I want to add beats. I need to learn how to do the drums. I want to learn how to make this kind of chill music. And it sounded familiar to me because it's, you know, kind of what I grew up listening to as well. So April 2020, I started making lo-fi. Again, you know, I don't know what it was like for you when you started making lo-fi, but man, it's a lot harder than it sounds like.
It is. Well, dude, I love this journey that you just painted. But I guess for me, I started really focusing on lo-fi in March of 2020. So we were in that same time period.
Yeah.
And for me, coming from dubstep production, it almost felt like I was able to, I guess going into it and not thinking that there was any rules. It was so freeing because coming from this future-based dubstep perspective, I felt so locked into trying to create a perfect banger, right? And so when I found lo-fi, and this was before I was extremely familiar with Lo-Fi Girl, I was just making whatever I wanted. And so it was just extremely freeing. But then of course, when you want to make specific types, it undoubtedly gets more difficult. But dude, from 2017 until now, or especially till 2020, you're just following this artist journey, this hero journey arc, essentially perfectly. You know, like you have the call, then you begin to face resistance of saying, I don't know if I should do this. And then you do it. And then somehow you land an opportunity to score a couple films. Like, what? That's wild, man. That's wild. And I kind of, I want to, you were talking about going into that, going into scoring these two films really without any knowledge. So like, what was going through your head of like, how am I going to pull this off?
I think it was a Dunning-Kruger effect. I think it was a thing of, you know, the Dunning-Kruger, like if you're not really knowledgeable in something, you get a lot of confidence in it. But as you learn more, you realize how much you don't know. Kind of like that. I think it was kind of a mix of the Dunning-Kruger of like, I thought I knew more than I did. But also my approach has always been, if I don't know something, I'll just learn as I go along. Like, I've done that with everything. I did that with lo-fi. I kind of was like, I'll take the job and figure it out later kind of thing. And that was my approach for a lot of projects.
So I actually was not familiar with that theory, and I'm definitely going to check it out because I think my life is Dunning-Kruger.
Yeah, man. No doubt about it. It's really interesting. But my approach was always like, you know, take the job and figure it out on the way. And it seemed to work. Obviously, as I went along, I was like, okay, shit, there's a lot I don't know here. I need to learn this and I need to learn that. I need to learn how to mix and how to produce and these sounds and that sounds and music theory and how to play this instrument and that and how an orchestra works. And broke my head, just exploded.
Mm-hmm.
I still couldn't tell you how I did it. I think a lot of it was guitar based, which is just what I was familiar with. But
Well, I think it's so important to have that initial bit of confidence in so many aspects of your life, man, because I'd rather think that I can do it, try, and then muddle along until I figure it out and make it okay. And I remember when I really wanted, it was on my birthday on 2014, I essentially had a life epiphany of I had just gotten back from a reggae show.
And I'd played saxophone since
I
was...
You were playing like the radio show?
No, I was attending. Attending. Cool. My favorite band of all time is Revolution, and their reggae band out of Santa Barbara. But So I was... It was down in Phoenix, Arizona, and we were driving back to Colorado. Everybody else in the car was passed out. And so I'm driving down this like highway in the middle of the desert and just had this epiphany of, dude, I've played the saxophone for like 9 years at that point or 8 years at that point. And it was always secondary to athletics. I was a wrestler in high school, and that was my life. But I went to a small enough school where I could do other activities. So I was always in band, but I never took my saxophone home to practice. It was just an at school thing, but like driving down that highway, I had this epiphany of what happens if I treat playing the saxophone, learning the saxophone, really dialing in the fundamentals like I did with wrestling, like what could happen? And so that started me on this trajectory of wanting to be a saxophonist in a reggae band. And so that lasted for, I think it was 5 months. And then I was at Red Rocks Amphitheater in Denver, Colorado. And I saw Skrillex two nights in a row at Red Rocks. And watching Skrillex up there DJing, and this is 2014, so it's still, it's fresh. It feels so new. I just remember looking on stage and I was like, whatever that is, like whatever that dude is doing right now, that's what I want to do. And I was naive and cocky enough to tell my friends, like, whatever that was, like, I'm going to do it. And then, of course, purchased Ableton and started the journey and learned how much I didn't know. But but luckily, I'm stubborn enough that I just kept doing it even when the music wasn't good. So I love hearing that story, man, because I think having that confidence and then the resilience to carry through is so important.
Well, I think it just comes from a place of if you want to, like, you know, I think it is a bit of stubbornness, like you mentioned, like if I want to do something, I'm going to do it kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it really is just that. I think I really enjoyed listening to film music. I really enjoyed creating film music, whatever that was. And I just kept doing it until mid 2020. And then I kind of discovered lo-fi and started moving more into that. Making beats, doing that kind of thing, moving more into like the actual production of it. Because with ambient music, you don't have to worry about drums, you don't have to worry about vocals. There's like two huge things that make up any other piece of music that you don't have to worry about. So I really like my composition, my melodies, my, you know, sound selection especially. That's something that I'm always very proud of. My sound selection was on point. Like I had got that down pat. As soon as it came to drums, and even to this day, I don't touch like actual vocal mixing, don't touch it, but my drums, didn't know what I was doing. It was terrible, man. I had no idea. I was putting in random sounds. I had no idea. Drum patterns completely, like no idea. So, yeah, that was the biggest learning curve for me there. But I think at the time I was kind of, you know, moving away from the film industry or the film music industry, I should say, because I think around September that year, I had a few really cool opportunities to do some advertisement music and they fell through, and just a whole lot of other opportunities that it was just like getting, you know, beaten back. And it was especially, so my first Lo-Fi Girl album was actually, so the one that came out, A Place Above Heaven, had one track on it from the initial batch of tracks that I sent them from the initial 8 batch track. They rejected 7 of them. They took one of them, which was the one with Cult called Midnight Walk. But the 7 that they took they rejected in, I think, September or October 2020. And I remember it was right off the bat of getting rejected off a bunch of other things. And I was just like, bang, 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 just beaten down.
Yep.
And it was rough. And so long story short, I just went, I need a break from this shit. I'm like done. Like this is killed me. Like, I've done this for like, at this point, it was like 2019 and 2020, completely full-time music, like almost 2 years of full-time music, and I was just done. I was like, this isn't going anywhere. I need to like take a break. So I decided to go back to uni because I was just like, I'm done with music. And I went back for a semester, and one of the tracks I did with J-Hove that year got accepted onto his EP, Falling Dreams, and it came out in February. And I turned around to my partner after that came out, and I'm like, look, I may as well try one more time. I'm just going to give it 2 weeks. It can't hurt. I'm going to make a bit of lo-fi. And I'll send it off. If they don't take it, it's 2 weeks of my life. Whatever, I can move on. If they take it, then cool. I've got a little EP with Lo-Fi Girl. It's cool. And then I ended up spending 3 months making A Place Above Heaven. And then from there, there's the rest of the story. But I mean, that feels like the current chapter. But up until there, that was kind of the whole story of how I started making music and then into making lo-fi.
The hero journey continues, yeah. Dude. I love it. Well, I love this rejection piece because it's,
yep.
I mean, everybody goes through it within their careers, and especially when you're creating art and you're giving a piece of yourself, and it's tough. Any rejection is tough, especially if you think it's some of the best work that you've ever created. And so when I, it's always interesting to have conversations with artists that are at one of those points in their journey. Of course, it happens multiple times throughout our journeys, and it will continue to happen. That's just how art works. But even like some of my friends that have tried like streaming or their own businesses, like you name it, anything where you're taking a risk, something that's not the norm. You're not just doing a 9-to-5 and getting that paycheck every 2 weeks or whatever. You're taking a risk to try to do something that's super difficult. And it's always, I guess for me, I just always try to tell them just like, work harder. Like, you just work harder and hold on. Like, it'll happen. Good things will happen if you just keep pushing. You got to keep pushing. And so, I guess for you with that rejection piece, like, walk us through that, man. Walk us through that moment where you said, I tried this for 2 years. It's not working. I got to go back to uni. I got to get a job. Let's get a career. But then that transition to say, you know what? Well, maybe I'll take a risk. Like, walk us through those thought process.
Yeah. I mean, so I dropped my first lo-fi track in June, May 2020, and then dropped another one. Didn't do as well. But the first one did all right. It was like the first lo-fi track, I think, got like 60 or 70K streams. And coming off the bat of ambient music, I think my best track at the time got 60 or 70. So I was like, this is pretty cool. So I had a bit of confidence that I knew what I was doing. But then I had an opportunity with a company, I won't mention who, but they were an advertisement company, and they asked me to write music for a commercial for a car company, a pretty well-known car company. And they said that the way they'll work is they want within a week, they wanted two drafts of this music. They sent me the kind of example music, or like, you know, the reference track. And it wasn't really anything I'd done before. And they said, are you confident with this? Like, is this your style of music? And me being I'll take the job and figure it out later, said, mm-hmm. Of course, give it to me.
Of course, easy.
But I had I had no idea this is a style of music. It was kind of like that, like that Mumford and Sons, like of Monsters and Men, like,
yeah,
big
okay.
Kind of, never done anything like that before. And so I had a week, I spent about like 10, 12 hours a day for this every day for the whole week making this track. And I sent them the two tracks at the end of it. I had a few calls with the A&R of that company, just kind of going back and forth on feedback and stuff. And at the end of the 2 weeks, I didn't hear anything back.
Mm.
Now, I was supposed to do a trial for another two tracks, for another two advertisement gigs. They didn't get back to me about that. They didn't get back to me about anything, like zero, just radio silence. And I was like, wow, I really like dropped the ball on that one. And like a few weeks later was the Lo-Fi Girl rejection, which was a big hit because I talked to a few artists in the scene, showed them my music, and they were all like, this is really, really good. Like, this is excellent. Like, I can't see why the label wouldn't take this. And the label hit me with the... Now, when listening back, of course, now I understand why the label didn't take it. But at the time, I'm like, what is this?
Yeah.
And then coming off the bat of just not getting many, like, film scoring gigs, not getting many opportunities, not seeing much growth over the past few months because I'd been focusing on other stuff. I wasn't focusing on building up my social media and stuff. And man, I just went, I can't, I'm done, this isn't viable for me. I just went, I wanted to see if I could do it. Maybe I can, but this isn't viable. I need to have a backup option because I can't do this. And so I turned around and I went, I need to go back to uni. I need to have a backup option. I'm just going to do like, I went back to do like a part-time load. So I only did like one unit instead of four. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, I need to do this, and then I'll work on the side or something because this is just not viable. I cannot continue doing this.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, once that track with J-Hope came out, I mean, that I was really like, it was kind of like a final, like, Hail Mary, you know? It was really a Hail Mary. Where I just went, fuck, I'm gonna throw it and see what happens. It was interesting. So that was between November and February where I just had zero music going on. And I told people around me I was done with music, like done, like done, like I'm done, done, done. And a few people turned around to me and said, you're not done. Like, you will come back. Like, I watch, you will. And I'm like, no, I'm done. Trust me. And so it was interesting how a few people around me actually knew me better than I knew myself. It's really interesting when that happens. And lo and behold, I did obviously eventually come back into music. But I think there's two things to this story. There's one, obviously we all face rejection and it gets shit sometimes. And I fully just, I don't know if you want to call it giving up or taking a break or whatever you want to call it, but I fully just went, no, like, I'm done. Like, I don't want to look at this anymore. And I think that was also important to take my mind off it. But two, I think if you really love something and you really enjoy doing something and it's really a part of who you are, you'll come back to it eventually and you'll find a way to make it work. I think that's the really important takeaway here, is that you will always, always find a way to make it work if you really, really want it. I don't know if I can speak for everyone, but I think you can.
I agree, ma'am. But it's also, it's coupled with the tenacity and the willingness to be uncomfortable. Like, it's not easy.
Yeah,
it's not an easy path.
100%.
And I love that part about your journey as well. It's not like you tried music full time for 2 weeks. You know, it was 2 years of grinding and trying to learn. And it's hard to, it's hard to take a loss at something if you've trained so long. So I guess for me, the best example for me. So I run marathons and ultra marathons. And
very cool, man.
Very cool.
What's an ultra marathon compared to a regular marathon?
Anything further than 26.2 miles.
Cool.
So just a long way. So I did let's see. So a 50K. I did a 50K like 3 weeks ago. And so I try to do around 4 every single year because it's the opportunity to really challenge myself. Like I don't know if there's any other physical challenge that I can take on that's necessarily more difficult. And it's also training for months at a time for this one particular race. And I've screwed that up a bunch of times. I either I did a marathon up a Pikes Peak, which is a 14,000 foot mountain in Colorado. So it's 13.1 miles up to the top of the peak, 13.1 miles down. For my 15-week training program, I said, I'm going to go 70-75% exertion effort. It's going to be a nice day out, not going for a crazy time, just want to enjoy it. And as soon as the gun went off for the start of the race, I got in with a group of really fast runners who I had no business running with. But, of course, I thought I'd be even 3 miles in, 4 miles in, I was like, I got this. Yeah, this is going to be the best race of my life. And then, of course, at like mile 10, I crashed and burned because I was I was with pro runners. But for me, it's having those moments for a race, for ultramarathons, for something that I'm not competitive in. I'm never going to make money. It's just something to test my resilience and teach me about the hardships of life in a relatively controlled environment. And so as soon as rejection happens for music or any other artistic endeavor that I'm a part of, I just put that physical training experience into my mind. I'm like, it's gonna be okay. Like, what do you do if you have a bad race? Like, just, well, keep working, work harder. And so if I ever get rejection, it's analyze the rejection, say, where did I screw up? How did I fall short? And then just work harder and try to emotionally detach as much as possible. And I guess that's my 2 cents for anybody listening and they're in a phase of rejection. But like, you're part of the story where you threw the Hail Mary. Like, what an unbelievable aspect of the story. And I'm guessing if that track didn't land, the universe would have brought you back to music somehow.
I mean, maybe I'd like to think so, but who knows, right?
But maybe not.
Who knows? That's the, that's the beauty of it. It's just that it happened, and that's just the way the story goes, I guess. Like, you know, That's the beauty of it. I mean, yeah, there could have been 100 other things gone different. I mean, I remember at the time when I started, there was a film composer from the Czech Republic who started. We were talking early on, and do you know Gary V? I'm sure you know Gary V.
Yes. Yep.
And about a year after he started, he became the main composer for the Gary V channel. I'm like, fuck. Great. Like, what am I doing, bro? What am I doing wrong?
Yep.
Like, shit, man. So, yeah, like, it was, when you see stuff like that as well, you're like, you start to doubt yourself. You're like, am I, what am I doing here?
Totally.
So, yeah. I'd like to think so, but yeah, there's 110 things that could have happened, but. The way the story goes is that, yeah.
Well, and I love that comparison piece, man. And I think it's so easy. I know for me, it's so easy to as soon as I see somebody doing something better than me, I go, why? Mm. Why? And I know that's, I think it's relatively true for all of us. It's kind of a default setting, but like, especially with Spotify Wrapped happening yesterday, I love it so much. I love being able to see what everybody has accomplished and especially within our community, dude, of the friendships and the support that we all have is pretty unimaginable within like the music industry. If you look at any other genre. And so I guess for me, if I ever catch myself doing that, I try to put a pause on it. And then, of course, on the podcast, I'm doing my best to promote that unity, because we're all so much stronger together. That was just a little aside. But I guess for your journey, so things were rough. Things were rough for a little bit, but then things started looking up. So tell us about the good part of the good chapter that you've been enjoying over the past year and a half.
So yeah, so from there I went, I'm going to make a few tracks for 2 weeks. That 2 weeks ended up being 3 months, and I sent in my track to the Lo-Fi Girl team. I sent in 9 tracks. They ended up taking 5, which was amazing. I mean, I think it was like 4 collabs in 1 solo track, so felt a little bit of imposter syndrome, but it was fine. It was good. I was happy they took some of my music. I was like, this is awesome. And then ended up making A Place Above Heaven, which was incredible. That was a lot of fun. And I think from there, I mean, I talked to a few of the guys, but they were pretty much just like, look, once you get the first paycheck for this album, you can kind of quit your job. I'm like, what do you mean? Mm-hmm. So we talked about that, and that was a really cool feeling. And so I knew kind of November, December was I could start really going full-time with music and really focusing on it. And so I just went, okay. So I started taking it a bit more seriously. I started putting in more effort into the marketing. So I did like a small little like 1-minute video for A Place Above Heaven, did photos, did the whole thing. And then, yeah, I think it was around that time as well that I started streaming and I started doing the Discord community, which was a whole other aspect of the lo-fi scene that I was doing, which was a lot of fun. I then started working with Jisatsu on the other album, what was it called, To the Moon and Back. We did a small album. It was a full collaborative album. It was a lot of fun. And, yeah, I just spent the back half of the year just making more music, just getting to know more people, making more connections. I mean, it was still lockdown here in Melbourne. And so I just spent most of my time online talking to people, making connections, all that. It was really, really good fun. It was a really, really special time period in my life where I'd finally reached a little bit of success with my music, and I got to meet more like-minded people, and I got to hang out with people who were also making similar music. And yeah, it was really, really, really fun, man. And it really felt like the right place to be, and it was really, really, really good. And then start of October last year in 2021, I broke up with my partner of about 4 years. We decided mutually it just wasn't a healthy relationship, and then wrote Are We Okay about that 3-month period afterwards. And so the first third of the album was kind of about the breakup and moving on, and then the rest of the album was just about the friendships I was forming during that time period. You know, I was spending a lot of time online talking to a lot of guys, you know, playing games together from the lo-fi scene, and so a lot of the album was about that. And so that was kind of the back half of the year. And then November, December came around, I quit my retail job that I was working, and then that brings us into this year. But that was, yeah, that was 2021, man. It was a very exciting year. It was very, very cool. Yeah.
Awesome.
It was definitely the most eventful, like, 0 to 100 I've ever experienced in my life.
Yeah.
In 1 year.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, first, I just want to say A Place Above Heaven is such a beautiful name.
Thank you.
Just trying to visualize that. Like, what a beautiful concept.
Thanks. Yeah.
So I want to dive into how you've structured your day after quitting the retail job. Mm. So diving into music full time again. So it's been a year since you quit your other job?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, to the T, pretty much a year. Yeah, plus or minus a week. But yeah, a year, man, pretty much.
Awesome. So kind of walk us through how you're being your own boss. Like you're your employer now.
Yeah, I mean, this is where it gets a bit hazy. So being my own boss is something that I learned. The discipline in your skills and the how I work is something that I learned during the 2 years that I was not making any money and not really getting any success in the music. And that really taught me how to work and what I like to do for work and how to just sit down and do what I need to do. And the reason I also bring that up is because I think that a lot of people have this perception that all you need to be successful is just to get your big break and then you're good. But you need to know how to manage that as well. You need to know how to manage all of the stuff that is hitting you, and you need to know how to put it together and piece it together to either sustain it or keep growing. Yep. And you will, it'll be kind of like, it'll happen when it's meant to happen. It will come to you when you're able and when you're open to receiving that. Because if I received, and I always said it, like it happened to me at the right time, because if I received that success earlier on, I would have fucked it. Like I would have completely cooked the basket. I would have just either gone off the rails making like some weird music, or I just wouldn't have known how to build relationships properly. It all would have gotten to my head. I was like 19. My ego would have been out of control. Like it happened when it's meant to happen. So it's really, really important to recognize that even though you don't have the success now, the skills that you're learning while you're building up to that are so important, and they will transfer over. So being my own boss was something I was already familiar with. You know, I had 2 years of unpaid, unsuccessful experience, and then kind of a 6 month, you know, to 1 year of kind of successful paid experience, I guess, at that point. And the big thing was at the end of 2021 was coming out of lockdown. I was like, I want to meet all these guys. I've been friends with them for pretty much a year at this point, or 6 months. And I want to meet them. I want to hang out with them. I want to go to meetups, blah, blah, blah. And so I booked a ticket for myself in April to go to Europe. So up until April, I mean, I had another album come out. This was the album that was structured into thirds, called Are We Okay? That was at the end of January. And I wasn't really making much music at the time. I was kind of focusing more on, you know, we're out of lockdown. It's summer. It was summer here in Australia, November, December. And I was just enjoying going out, seeing friends. Mm-hmm. Then at the end of January, a bunch of the guys organized a meetup in Berlin. I was really annoyed that I couldn't come because I'd already booked my ticket for April, and I was sitting there. It was on a Monday, like the 1st of February or something. And I was sitting there on the Saturday, and I was talking to, I remember it was Odd Panda and Theo Abel. I was sitting there talking to them. They're like, man, you should just come. Ha 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 ha. You know, I'm like, okay, you know, I'll check the flight prices, see if there's anything like cheap. And I saw a return flight for about $800 there. And I was like, man, that's cheap as shit. Like usually they're about $1,600-$1,700 return flights, and now they're like $2,500 flight prices are ridiculous at the moment here. But it was like $800, which is pretty much free. And I went, I was like, guys, like it's cheap. Like I could actually afford this. And they're like, bro, like you should come. So I went, literally walked into my dad's room, like, here's the situation. They're doing a meetup for a week. Should I go? And he's like, bro, like, of course. Like, that sounds awesome. Like,
that's awesome.
So I went back, and 24 hours before my flight was supposed to go, I booked the ticket to Berlin. I'd never been solo traveling. I'd never been to Europe, nothing. And I told the guys, all right, I booked the ticket. I'll see you in 2 days. They're awesome, both dude. Freaking, we're all like freaking out. It's nuts. And they were just all kept it a secret. So we kept it a complete secret. They were like, don't tell anyone. I'm like, okay. They were like, we'll come pick you up, Berlin. Your flight's like 9 o'clock in the morning, lands. We'll come pick you up. Got there. They came to pick me up. This is like 2 days later. I'm like, my head's spinning. I don't even know what's going on. We get to the little place they're staying at Berlin. Everyone just goes ballistic. Like, they were asleep, so, awesome. I'm kind of going in and waking up people, and everyone is just going nuts. Everyone's like, what the, bro, you're mentally, like a 25-hour flight from Australia just for
you're
a one-week meetup.
Like, in Australia.
The mental, man. Yeah, it's like mental. Like, I look back and I'm like, it's still like to this day, one of the coolest things I've ever done. And awesome. I don't think it would have been possible if the flight wasn't that cheap, so I'm thankful, but it was cool as, man. No one was expecting it. I rocked up. I had the best week of my life with, like, no Spirit, BVG, like, Monberg. Who else was there, man? Like Odd Panda, Grisp, Theo. It's a heap of guys. It was awesome. There were definitely – and Tibo was there, of course. There was so many guys. And yeah, so I mean, so anyway, the reason I bring this up is because you asked me what it was like being my own boss. I mean, up until like pretty much when my album came out, when I got back from Europe, which was in June, I was just like out doing whatever. Like, I went in February and then I came back after that week, and then a month later I was going back for my big Europe trip. I did the whole big Europe trip, which was its whole own story. And I got back in about mid-June, and from mid-June until like end of September, which is when my due date for all the tracks was, I was just, that was the only time I can tell you about being my own boss, because it was like, I had 1 week where I made like five of the tracks on the album, and then I had like two months where I did nothing because I just didn't have the motivation for it.
Wow.
And then I had like another little 2 weeks where I made the first two tracks on the album, and then nothing again. And then a little bit here, a little bit there, a little bit here, a little bit there. But it's definitely been tough, because a lot of my best friends here still live your standard life. They're either going to uni to study or they're working a 9-to-5. And the hardest thing being here was it's been very, very isolating, especially the first when I came back. I finish my work, or I'm not making music. I'm sitting here. I'm waking up at 9 o'clock in the morning. I'm going to sleep at like 11 p.m. There's no one to see. People are at work. All my friends are at work. All my friends are studying. My two brothers that are usually home are also at work. My dad's at work. Mum's off in New Zealand traveling. You know, there might be a little, you know, some people free here and there, but I think the biggest challenge I've had to deal with this year being my own boss is not so much when do I do the work and how do I do the work. That's been fine. Like, as I said, those are skills that I learned previously. I know kind of what I need to be doing, and I know when I need to take a break, when I need to be working. But the biggest challenge has been the isolation I'm experiencing, which is I'm here and no one's ever really free. You know, I might see people like a few times a week, but it's really hard to see people when everyone's at work or studying for exams.
Yeah.
Like, genuinely everyone I know.
Yeah. That's really interesting. Do you think...
It's been the toughest thing.
Wow, that's really interesting, man. So with that isolation piece, I mean, of course, we're human beings, right? So we need human connection. But I guess what do you get most out of those hangout sessions or those conversations? Because it obviously impacts you pretty greatly. So what do you think is happening by not getting that interaction?
Man, it's a very, very good question, but I think I just enjoy seeing people. I just enjoy hanging out with people. It's just, you know, I don't know, introvert, extrovert, I don't know what you call it. I mean, I love spending time by myself, you know, like that's how, you know, for 10 years of my life, I spent so much time by myself, and that's great, and I really appreciate that time, but there's only so much, you know. I need the balance between being with people and not being with people. And so, don't get me wrong, man, if I'm with people all the time, I will be complaining down the other end that I need my own, like, space, just leave me alone kind of thing. But obviously there's a balance with everything that happens in life. And right now the scales are tilted way into the alone time than it is into the social time. What do I get out of it, man? I don't know. I think it's just the human, I think, as you said, we're just human beings. I think just human interaction, being with people, is just something that's innate to us, something that we need, I guess, or most of us feel like we need.
Important.
And it's not even necessarily music, socially, like musically, like it's just hanging out with people, going to the beach, going for a walk, going to a coffee, lunch, whatever it is.
Yeah, it is. Well, and I think balance is what we're going to be chasing for the rest of our lives and all aspects of our life. Whenever we find that perfect balance, it's soon to go away, and we'll have to regain that balance again. But I think 'Tis His Life. Nadav, as we're nearing the end of this conversation, man, which I greatly appreciate. This is, it's been super inspiring, and I love the depth in which we got to explore your story and evolution, man. I think I just want to end the conversation off with your thoughts or what you would tell an artist who similar to you, who has been pursuing music at a full-time level. Maybe they haven't quit their job, but they're trying to go, they've put in 5 hours a day on top of their studies, or 5 hours a day on music on top of their full-time job. And they're like 2 years in, and they're on the cusp of giving up, and they just want to quit. Like, what would you tell them?
There's a few things here. I mean, it's a tough one, man. I've always said, if you feel like you need a break, take a break is the most important thing. But I think if it's something you really want to do and it's something you really think that you can achieve, then you should do it, I think. But I think for me, the thing that really helped me out of it, you know, when I got back into it, when I was like, the J-Hope track has dropped, I want to start making music again. The thing that really helped me was being able to send music to people like, you know, in the lo-fi scene, and getting their feedback, getting that, you know, feedback from them, whether it was good, whether it was bad, whatever it was interacting with them and seeing what they think about my music and talking about their music and just hanging out, even though it was online. That's what really helped me. So I would say try and find like-minded people, try and find some sort of community that you can latch yourself onto. And I assume for most of the listeners here who are doing lo-fi, you already have that. You've got some of the, and I was in the deathcore scene, I was in the ambient scene, I was in the film scoring scene. I wasn't really in the electronic music scene, but I've heard the same thing about the electronic music scene, is that the community of artists, I don't know about the fans, I'm definitely more a part of the artists, but the community of artists and producers in the lo-fi scene are some of the best you'll find. They're some of the friendliest, some of the most open people in the world. And I think you definitely shouldn't take that for granted as a as a producer, as a new producer, as an experienced producer. You've got some of the best people in the world here and some of the most talented people in the world. Man, the fact that you can hit up some of the biggest artists in this genre and they will help you out and they'll work with you is amazing. You won't find that anywhere. Take advantage of the fact that you have an amazing community around you. And if you don't, go find it, because that is what will help you the most, when you can reach out to people who are going to be experiencing the same things. These are not, you know, my story, while the specific beats are very unique to me, the overall kind of themes and the overall things I've experienced are not very unique. You know, we've all experienced rejection, we've all experienced setbacks, we've all experienced self-doubt, we've all experienced periods where we don't want to do anything, and periods where we have a lot of success and we continue. We're all going to continue experiencing that as well. And so I think reaching out and talking to people about that and having that sense of familiarity with someone is what will help the most. So if you do feel like giving up, go and talk to people, because I guarantee you they've either experienced or are experiencing exactly that.
Dude, I think that's a perfect sentiment to end this on. They got me hyped up. Almost brought a tear to my eye, man. We're so freaking lucky. We really are. We really are.
Seriously. It's amazing.
Well, and I just love that it's, and we're such a young community with so much potential as our scene continues to grow, but then as all of the individual artists that are within our community continue to grow and expand, like I'm excited for the future and I don't want to take it for granted. And thank you for sharing your story and your insight, dude. This was
thank
a ton
you
of
for
fun
listening.
Yeah, well, and let's we'll get you back on again, man. Next big project you have coming out, let's get you back on and see
sure.
see what.
I would love to.
Yeah, dude, I'd love it as well, man. And maybe even who knows? We can take this conversation wherever it goes. But I know that this conversation is going to positively impact my life moving forward, and I know it will.
I appreciate it, bro. Thank you.
So thank you, brother. For real, thank you.
Thank you. Have a beautiful day.
You too, man. I'm gonna start winding down. I know it's morning for you, Mr. Living in the future, dude. All right, brother. Everybody tuning in, thank you. Much love. Peace.